this evening, Doc from San Diego.
Well, Doc, I'm a full-time alcoholic, no days off. You know, I know some people laugh at that, but in my addiction, I could not take a damn day off. If you could, why the hell are you in this room? You kind of know what I mean? That means you were still a heavy drinker. First, I'd like to thank the house for inviting me, you know, SoCal Joe, and a few other people asked me to come and speak, and I told them you can't handcuff me because you know how I am, you know. So I figured you guys must be getting bored, you know. Let's get a black guy come to talk today, you know. We have nobody else, you know, and it has to be a black guy to have some time out there, you know. So I figured I'd come on down and help you guys out, you know. Carry the message. My sobriety date is January 7th, 07. I grew up in a family that was different. I have seven brothers and three sisters. Oh, yeah, damn. When did he put his pants on, huh? My God. Jesus. My dad was in the Navy 30 years, and my mom was an RN for 25 years. So I am third from the youngest, and all my sisters are older than me. So I had the opportunity to be able to watch life grow up. You know what I mean? I seen divorce, prison, gangs, all of that good stuff from my brothers and sisters as I was growing up, you know. But I was pretty much a baseball nut. But my dad was in the 60s and 70s. You really couldn't tell who was an alcoholic and who was just having a damn good time, you know. You know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, you know. The hippie movement, the freedom, you know. I remember my sisters them trying to burn their bras and caught the garage on fire and all that shit, you know. So, you know, but see, you know, I grew up in those days, you know, Sam Cooke and James Brown, good music, you know, finger popping. And I remember, you know, my dad was one of those people that he didn't drink hard liquor on the weekends, but through the week, he would have beer and his friends would come over and they would drink beer because they were military, you know. It was a long time before I even knew what my dad's first name was. I called him Dad, and all his friends called him Gant, you know. But they would drink. In those days, the couches had plastic on them, you know. And you know the 70s, you know, where they put cigarettes on the counter table, and they had the lighters where it was down in the thing, you know what I mean, really fancy and all that, you know. Field & Stream magazines with Playboys stacked under the bottom, you know, whatever. Those days, yeah. But I really didn't get into drinking too much until, you know, when I had my first drink when I was like 13. I'm not going to sit here and give you a drunk-a-log. We all got a drunk-a-log, you know what I mean? Well, I don't want to talk about the solution. But I pretty much drunk enough liquor to float an aircraft here. And I'm pretty sure I smoked up half of Colombia and snorted up a good part of Peru. So if you are, when we on the same wing, he over there like, damn, yeah. So, you know, if drugs and alcohol is part of my story, you know, it's a problem to you. We can talk about it after the meeting. You are fortunate if you did one drug the whole time you were getting loaded. God damn. My respect to you. My hat's off to you. But I had my first drink about, I think I was about 13 years old because I have three sisters and they're all older than me. And my dad was like, you know, they're his daughter. So they would have, in those days, they had slumber parties. You invite all your friends over, and they, you know, and all of us boys are listening to them having a good giggling time upstairs. And one of her friends came in there, and you know, and she was drinking something, and she said, "You know, I really like you. You're so cute." And of course, I'm looking up at her, you know, you know what I mean. And she said, "Here, have a drink of this." And I'm like, "Wow." She said, "Here, you have a drink of this, and I'll take my top off. You take your top off." And I think I poured that brandy up my nose, but I know the feeling. I don't know if it was her raising her top or the brandy that made me just get that. Ooh. Yes, sir. I had an early age of knowing what a can of man felt like, you know what I mean? But I really didn't bother with too much liquor, you know, until when I was about 15 or 16. I know I was early days in high school because I was a baseball nut, and I made varsity in ninth grade, going to 10th grade. So my head was already big from athletic sports, but I had one of those uncles that used to buy a new car every year, and he always had a hot-ass girlfriend, you know? And when I did my step work, I realized that she would have me come over and do housework when he wasn't there. And my uncle would say, here, boys, $40. Go over there. I want you to trim a tree. She'll be there. She'll take you. And I believe, you know, when I did my step work, that I was molested. You know, but as I like to tell people, I was thoroughly educated in the female anatomy. So that's just the way it went, you know. I went around for about 3 years after that trying to date 30-year-old women when I was 17, you know. They're like, son, you're just a little too young for me. Did something happen to you? Yeah, all right. So by the time I joined the U.S. Army, I spent 11 years, you know, doing duty, honor, and country. I don't want to go into a killer log or save a log of what I did for a United States Army, but I did a lot of things in the reserve too that got me to the point where we would drink because of victory, we would drink because of sadness, we would drink because of loading the plane with caskets, we would drink when we came home. You know, we do coke in order to forget, we do coke to remember. That's just the way it was, you know. But what it did was slowly progress for me. It slowly progressed to the point where I became homeless, unemployable. You know, we like to say homeless. We like to say more dignified. I was urban camping, you know. Anytime you pitch a tent in the middle of downtown, something's wrong with your damn life, you know. So I did that for about 3.5 years, you know, going around hustling marijuana to get my vodka. Because by then it had progressed from where you could go in the bar and drink and take it or leave it to the point where you would drink alone, you know. You start like being like one of those evil people on movies. Your shoulders go up and you hunch down. Mine! You know, anytime you tell somebody you love them and you won't give them a drink, boy, your girlfriend has changed. You know, it was the liquor that was my master. Alcohol became my master. I mean, beat the hell out of me. You know, they say in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous that the sting of the last, until the sting of the lash becomes unbearable, when the sting of the lash of alcohol becomes unbearable, are you willing to change? Have you ever seen somebody whip? Where you cringe every time the whip hits them, and you still trying to hold out? I tried to hold out for a long time. I didn't run out of money and hustle. I ran out of health. I wound up in the hospital, and my pancreas was swelling up on me. And the doctor came in the room, and he said, "Lung man, let me tell you something." He said, when your car breaks, you take it to a mechanic. He tells you what's wrong with it and how to fix it. He said, when your teeth hurt, you go to a dentist. He tells you what's wrong and what they're going to do to it. He said, I'm a doctor. I know the human body. He said, buddy, you're going to die. You know? He said, you're going to die in about 30 days if you go back to drinking alcohol. He said, you can go back to drinking in 3 years. You're going to die in 30 days. Your body can't handle it no more. He said, so the thing you need to do is go to what we call the rooms of recovery and stay there. Now, I came here the first time, and tried to hang around, do what you guys did. I got a whole year. Got almost a year out of it. But when my dad died, my uncle from Las Vegas, he sat a fifth of Tanqueray on the garage, on the washing machine in the garage. And he said, boy, you can have a drink. Your daddy died. Then you can go back to that recovery shit. I can have a drink. My dad died. It was like off to the races. I woke up the next morning with my sister's ex-husband's new wife. Not good, you know. So when I came back the second time, everybody laughed because y'all done some shit like that too. You know? Man. So when I came back the second time, I did it by the design of the outline of the book, you know. I don't do it perfectly 100%, you know. None of us are saints. Well, I see a few people with imaginary halos above their head back there, you know. But, you know, I do it by the best of my ability. But when I got back here, I started reading the book and doing it by the book. Because I realized that when you do stuff by the book, my sponsor told me, it is your instruction manual. You're a goddamn alcoholic. And this is the instruction manual for you to live the rest of your life, designed by it. And he told me, he said, Vince, when you buy a refrigerator, it comes in an owner's manual. When you buy a car, it comes in an owner's manual. When you buy something, an item, to put it together, assembly, comes in an instruction manual. But see, us men, we want to put it together. I don't need that, baby. I got it. You put it together, it's like a vacuum. It's running, but you got three bolts left in your hand. He told me that's your damn life trying to do it without the book. Sooner or later, it's going to break. And that's what happened to me the first time. So now I try to do it to the best of my ability by the book. You know, so when I got to the rooms of recovery, I was a hothead. I wanted to be saved. You know, I spent a lot of time homeless. But I always figured that somebody was going to drive up in a limo and open the door like on Trading Places and go, get in, young man. We're going to change your goddamn life. You know what I mean? I give you everything you want. Never happened. So I found a place that somebody recommended for me for veterans that I went there to Veterans Village of San Diego, and I've been staffed there ever since, you know. This is year 9 for me being staffed. So 11 years I went there, and they showed me how to put my life together to be functional. They showed me how to put my life together to be productive. You know, I have those things back in my life from where you have a bicycle and a bus pass. You know, I have 2 cars. You know, I have a very nice place to live. You know, I've been through changes in life and relationships and divorce and death of my mother and all of those good things, you know. And they help me put my life together. I have investments. I have money in the bank, credit union. When I walk in, they say, "Hey, good morning, Mr. Gant." They don't go, "Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Big guy's going to rob us." No, it's my money. You know, I hang out with a lot of law enforcement people. I teach martial arts. My daughter's a cheerleader. I do a lot of different stuff now that is life on life's terms. Life on life's terms is a small-ass word. Small sentence, but it means a lot. You know, it's like when that stuff breaks at your house and you want to go, "Shit, I ain't going to fix it yet." The elephant's in the room, but you got to take care of it. And you wonder how. My car broke a couple of months ago, and I actually have $800 in my safe in the house to go fix it. Of course, you bitch, moaning, and whining the whole time. You know, I'm a member of the BMW Club. I'll bitch, moan, and whine real quick. You know, the whole time. But you know you got to take care of it in order to keep doing what you're doing, you know. You know people from the BMW Club, don't you? Bitch, moan, and whine all day. It's like, my God. But I did that, and those are the things that I'm able to take care of today. Because when I got to the rooms recovery, yeah, I was on what we would call the pink cloud, you know. I call it, when my sponsor said, that's when you just hanging around the rules. He said, there's going to be a time when you go from hanging around recovery to when you get in recovery. And he said, now that I brought that to the forefront of your head, you're going to start seeing people that are hanging around recovery and that are in recovery. He said, it's like the old days. You ever knew people that smoke weed but never bought none? You know what I mean? Man, damn, you know? Again? Shit. Come on. You know the people who always wanted a drink but never had no money just come up and start laughing at whatever you say until you buy them around, you know? Same thing. They're around, but they're not in. There's a couple of people in this room that taught me how to be a gentleman and how to get into recovery. You know, how to get in and stay in. And that's he and Randy sitting over there. You know, I didn't mean to call you guys out, but I don't give a damn, all right? They were there for me in my first 35 days when I got a chance to lead a program and go to outside meetings. And they were like, "Dude, you are crazy. You ain't going to be sober 90 days. And I'm coming up on 9 years. But it's a day-to-day process. Just like you were saying, Melissa, you know, I have to do this on a day-to-day thing because I've realized that over the years that I've ran into 3 kind of meetings. There's hundreds of kind of meetings, but to me, when you boil it down, you guys ever cook something in grease and you keep cooking and you pour it out and that gunk at the bottom of the pot? That's the boil down. And the 3 kind of meetings that I learned is that there's a vegetable meeting, there's a meat meeting, and a dessert meeting. And you've all been to all 3 of them. Vegetable meeting, you go to it, damn it, you're late. They ain't saying what they said. The person next to you is talking. You're pissed off. It's hot in there. They don't have no coffee. But your mama said, eat your vegetables. Why? You say, all right. We've all been to vegetable meat meeting. All right. Oh, the meat meeting. You go there and everything everybody shares, you can chew on it. Oh, man, chew with you. God, that's good. Well, when you leave, you're full. You know what I mean? Yeah. Man, I'm full from that meeting today. God. Ooh, I don't even need to stop on the way home. My recovery is full. But that dessert meeting, oh, man, woo, it's payday. Might be your birthday. What you share is good. You know what I mean? Nice and cool. Oh, man. Get to sit up front. Might sit in the back by that person who's been checking you out that maybe said maybe. You know what I mean? You just all smiles and feeling good. Dessert meeting. Yes. Vegetable meeting, meat meeting, dessert meeting. How many people in here have been to all 3? Oh, that's what I'm talking about. We want to be able to relate. You know, when I came here, I was really, really a newcomer who was into the difference. God, there isn't a black person in the whole damn meeting. Nobody's tall as me. She got on, oh man, he's got on better shoes. Did you see the car he pulled up in? He said something that I don't like. But my sponsor said, when you go to the meeting next time, same meeting, I want you to get into the similarities. Man, by the time the end of the meeting, I was shaking hands like a politician. Because everybody said something I could relate to. You know what I mean? The similarities is a powerful thing. Because the book says, without it, you know, we wouldn't all hang together. We wouldn't all hang together. But once I got into the similarities, everybody has something that's in common in this room, you know. I just want to be able to live a cool-ass life, you know, without all the drama. Because in my addiction, man, if I didn't have drama, I'd start something. How many of you start drama? Even when you know, have you ever been drunk and you want people to listen to you? You ain't even saying shit. But you got a point to make and you better listen till I'm done. It's like, man. But by the time I did that and I started getting out of that form of being a newcomer, because by then I had a year, like you were saying. You know, that second year got real hard for me because by then it was life on life terms. I mean, paying my own bills, you know, living life on your long, you know, you got to start doing the do. You got to figure out how I'm going to pay everything by the end of the month and still be happy. You know, but my sponsor said, listen, Doc, by the time you pay all your bills, be happy when you're broke. It took a while for me to chew on that one. But once everything was taken care of, it was all right being broke. It made me go to work because I wanted to be broke again. You know, the small things started really starting to matter. You know, once the more I started reading the book, it's the small things in the business of recovery that's important, because when you didn't have nothing, and I didn't have nothing, everybody has different bottoms as far as, you know, hitting the bottom. And I was a catfish drunk, as we'd say. You know, catfish come from way down in the mud. And that's exactly the way it was for me. But by that time, I wanted to try to, second year, get in a relationship, you know. And a wise old man to me, one of the clique that hung around with Randy and T, he told me, buddy, you better remember, relationships in recovery. He said, there's a thin line when you go from being a ooh to a ugh. There's a thin line when you go from being a ooh to a ugh. I went, wow. He said, you know what? You're fortunate to have one love. He said, in the rooms of recovery, everybody knows everybody. You know? So he said, you know what? Just wait until somebody wants to be your friend. Because he told me, you know what, women have a unique way of letting a person know I don't be your friend and when you want to take it to the next level. As my mom used to say, you guys got three things to say, either yes, no, or maybe. And maybe means yeah, but later. All right? And that's what made me feel good about that, you know. My sponsor is pretty much my chief advisor. I have a lot of advisors, but I like to look at him as being a journeyman. Because, see, I'd done construction work. I worked in NASCO for 5 years. I worked at McCune Chrysler for another 8 years. I hung drywall for 7 years. And I always had a journeyman that taught me the job, and I was an apprentice. I bring that same kind of thought and tenacity to being in recovery. You know, even though I'm coming up on 9 years, I like to keep my skills as an apprentice, where I can learn something new every day. I like to keep the top of my hat open to where somebody can pour some knowledge in there for me. Because I got nervous of having somebody when I had a year that only had a year and 2 months to be my sponsor. That's, to me, that's like the blind leading the blind. I wanted a journeyman who had been the journey, who had lost something to gain something, who knew how to pay his bills, who had a family, this and that, you know? And my sponsor, Paul, happened to be an MP in the Army for 15 years, and he's married for 30 years, and he's been sober for 26 years. And he's one of those mellow, laid-back kind of people who... And it always tells me, because see, when somebody tells you something and it don't have that gut feeling between your heart and your stomach, you want to ask somebody else. And he would tell me that. Go and ask somebody else. Because I had a sponsor. When I told him I asked somebody else, he flipped the hell out. Why did you go talk to somebody? I told you. I was like, listen, dude, that makes me nervous that you're getting mad about that. Paul would tell me, hey, no, go and ask somebody else the same question. And I would pretty much get a similar answer. That's the kind of person that I want to be my sponsor. You know, he never tells me what to do. He says, well, something similar happened to me, or this is what I would do, this is my advice. If not, he would relate me to somebody who does know, who went through something the same or similar. And I pretty much got some good damn guidance to take me up to where I'm at now. I don't do too many things as far as when I with the people that I sponsor, except when they start getting stuck on something. You know, I had a, that brings up to me with the thing about higher power, you know. I had trouble trying to explain to him that he was one of those people. He wasn't an atheist, but he was an astronaut. That's the right word we use. Yeah, that's a polite word of saying that. Some bitch didn't know if God really exists. You know, there was hint at something. And I told him, I said, man, what's the day? He told me what the day is. I said, what year is this? He said, it's 2015. I said, 2015 what? He said, A.D. All right. Something happened 2015 years ago that was so goddamn significant, the whole world started keeping time. Not just America, not just the Mexicans or the Chinese, every motherfucker started keeping time. All right? That means that something happened. That goddamn city, that's enough for you to believe in, don't you think? You ain't got to give it a name. Just call it time started. My higher power is time started. You know, we all have significant dates, you know, mother dying, birthday, you know, little kid, my son was born. The whole world didn't change the time. Oh, we're going to cut time out because Doc's born and had a son. No, but something happened that long ago that we are still keeping time. That's a powerful goddamn statement. Now, over the years, we can misscrew it and distort it to whatever you want to call it. But to me, that's my higher power. But see, I'm not a religious person. I'm a damn spiritual person. Because I've seen some chaos and madness around this world that I wish all of you guys could plug into my head and see yourself, besides on the TV. You know, religion is for people, you know, scared to go to hell. Spirituality is for people who've been to hell. I've been to hell in combat and in my addiction. If you really, really, really want to, you know, decipher that, just go ahead and think about it for a while. That's something for you meet me and chew on it for a little while. You know what I mean? But I know that when I hear people talk about higher power, God, you know, you only usually call God when you're in trouble. Ooh, when you're in trouble, boy, you get, it's like Monty Hall. Let's make a deal, God. You get me out of this shit, man. Ooh, man. Lord, help me out. Or if you see something significant. Oh, God. We usually cuss on it. Oh, shit. God, shit. Did you see that? Because the only other time we call God is when we're having good sex. Oh, God. Oh, God. Shit. Oh, God. Shit. Shit. Oh, God. Oh, God. Come on. Actually, he related that. He's like, man, yeah, that guy. All right. You know, when I started doing my step work, it really, really got to me when I had to admit that I was 100% alcoholic. Because, you know, you kind of want to test yourself, you know. And my sponsor told me, he said, man, you were in a relationship with alcohol for a long damn time that went bad on you. You ever been in a relationship real damn long and you finally break up with them? He said, don't you think alcohol's going to call you a couple of times to see who, you know, how you doing? It was that bad, you know what I mean? Phone rings. I mean, who is this? Liquor. I didn't beat you that bad. Yeah, you did. No, I only beat you on Mondays and we know you beat me every damn night. Click. Ring. Who is it? Yeah, same thing, you know. He said, no, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot be in love with recovery and be in love with addiction. You can't have on the pants of recovery and the coat of addiction. Everybody's looking at you. What the hell are you wearing? You got to put the whole goddamn suit on, you know. That was the part that I really had to, I had to look at, you know, am I still in love with my addiction? But I was falling in love with recovery real good, you know, because recovery in the beginning started looking real nice to me. It was pretty. It was new. You remember that pretty new when you first meet somebody? Hell yeah. I can't wait to see him again. I couldn't wait to see recovery the next day. Ready to go. And when I finally got a chance to get there and the relationship started, you know what? Yeah, of course, the book says more technical, the obsession is lifted. Because I had a long relationship with alcohol where I was obsessed with it. That little tunnel that I was living out of. Couldn't see the whole world. Just that little circle that we are staring out of. For years. Years. I don't know about the rest of you, but I spent a whole lot of years drunk beyond compare. So when I did get to the rooms of recovery and I started falling in love, I mean head over heels. I fell head over heels in love with recovery when I got here. You ever been head over heels in love with somebody? I mean, absolutely in love with them. Everything they say is funny. When they dig in, their nose is cute. When they fart, it smells good. You know what I mean? Come on now. Look at him back there like, yeah, goddamn it. Yeah, I didn't even complain the first time. Shit, you know? Act like I didn't hear it, you know what I mean? Yes, because you're in love with it, you know? I had my opportunity to talk to somebody the other day about relapsing, you know. And I told him, you know, relapse, everybody says relapse is part of recovery. I don't believe that, you know. I did it on a circumstance that just happened to happen. And it was not good for me, you know. And I tried to tell him, man, relapse does not start all of a sudden because you're having a bad day. Because see, the devil of, you can't believe in a higher power and not believe in the devil of addiction. The devil of addiction, if he can't come down the street and get you, he's going to go around the corner and wait in the cut. Till you come out. If not, he'll send his lieutenants to get you. He'll send you a case of the fuckets and the goddammits. And that son of a... And before you know what the hair is, you know what I mean? No, it starts long before then. Like they say, we relapse long before then. It's called Relapse Hotel. You know? Hello, Relapse Hotel? Yes. 3 months from now, 9 o'clock? Yeah. I like to play. Yeah, I'm going to check in. So who do I see when I get there? Paige? Oh, Payne. Yeah, Payne. Who else? Melissa? No. Misery? Okay. I'll be there. All right. You understand where I'm coming from? Long before then, you get a case of the goddammit. That person cuts you off. The person you're really trying to make you understand, you, that boss. Woo. Man, all of those things. All those accumulations, my sponsor told me they're little bitty pebbles on that scale of relapse until it finally moves. So every day I try to clear my scale just a little bit to make sure I'm all right, you know? Which brings us to, you know, what they call it, a personal inventory, a temp step, you know? Man, you sit down in the evening, do you guys realize how many people that you'd have pissed off when you get ready to go to bed tonight? But if you weigh that against how many people you helped and made happy, you know what I mean? How many people did I help? How many did I make happy? You know what I mean? But depends on what your occupation is, what you do in life, your situation at home, your relationship with your people. That's a tough one at night. Some people up till the next day trying to get rid of their personal inventory from the day before. And then there are those of us, we just go to hell to sleep, you know? But I learned that when I read the big book, you know, that a lot of smarts are in that book. The people that sat down in those days, man, I wish I could talk to them and just thank them so much. Because that must have been a hell of a thing to be flying blind until they got a design of how to put the shit together that we use today now, you know. That must have been madness. I mean, I sit on the convention committee. It's bad enough, the politics. But to try to create a book, just think we had to create a book. There'd be some fighting up in this motherfucker. But the book was designed just pretty much the way it was supposed to be. You know, I took a study class on the 12 traditions, and that really enlightened my, to the whole group, you know. I really like, you know, when they say the only requirement, you know, the only requirement is the desire to stop drinking, you know. That's a powerful statement. It makes me motivated. You don't have to bring no money in here. You don't have to dress a certain way. You don't have to say you know somebody. There's not a secret knock at the door, you know. That's a spiritual high to me. It's like something James Brown would say. The only requirement for membership is to put it down. That's a good-ass feeling. Once I decided that I needed to put it down and start helping, I sit on the convention board for Alcoholics Anonymous for Spring Roundup. I've been there now for 8 years, and you guys know that we came up with Living Serene in 2016 as our theme this year. And when they do get ready to print the flyers and seat series and bookmarkers, I bring you guys up. I am the equipment chair for Cocaine Anonymous in San Diego. So let me work in the Veterans Village on facilities. I got all the equipment they want, you know, barbecues, chairs, canopies, you name it. I sit on the board of Narcotics Anonymous, and I do the beach events and the camping events. So I do AACANA fucking A, keep you away from the DA. That's just the way it is, you know. I have to be as involved in my recovery as I was in my addiction. I thought I knew every liquor store. How many of you went to one liquor store the whole time you was getting there? Well, babe, they're closed tonight. We're not going to get drunk tonight. You was burning rubber around the corner. You were lucky if you knew one dope connection. Well, he doesn't have anything. We're just not going to get high. You're about to tear that damn phone up punching on it. I have to roll that way. I tell people I do my recovery like I did my addiction. Don't cut my dope and don't put no ice in my liquor. You ever used to be how people put ice in your liquor when you was a real alcoholic by then? What the fuck are you doing? You're taking up 3/4 in the goddamn glass. Pull this shit out and fill it up again. You know, my one of my chief advisors, my sponsor, not around, he told me that my recovery is like a child. You know, the book says it's a gift. It's a goddamn gift. In our addiction, somebody gives you a gift, you're probably going to tear it up and mess it up. You know what I mean? Anybody gives you something, you have people like in the day to give you a car, you know, you just tear it up. But let you have to buy it and earn it. Hey, what you doing there? Man, don't be doing shit, man. Sit right down. Oh, you're going to take care of it. Take care of you. I take care of my recovery because it's a child. If you are a 1 year, how many people in here are a year old or two? Yes. That gift of your child is just learning how to talk and tell you what it needs. My recovery is now 8 years old, getting ready to be nine. He knows when to tell me when I'm fucking up. Daddy, we going to go to a meeting today? No, son, shut up. You said we're going to read some big book tonight. Are we going to that step study? He can speak. But when you got an infant that's a child, it's like those days when you had a kid. You know what I mean? You got to call mama. What's wrong with him? Oh, girl, let me tell you what to do. You just turn him over, put some powder on him, and pat him a little bit, turn the fan on. It's the same when you call your sponsor now about your recovery. What the fuck is going on with my recovery? Oh, what we need to do. You know what I mean? The big book is what he, if that's what he going to do, go to the big book. It's just an instruction manual. It's just like a car, you know. A car comes with a glove compartment. We should have a flap in the back or in our ass where you just open up and get the big book out. I know, hold on. Yeah, I know what's wrong with you, yeah. We can't do that, you know. But we must listen to when people who are a little bit up the road, this is just the business of follow the leader, you know. You let somebody who's a little bit further up the road give you some solemn advice, because like I told you, it's there, the addiction is there. All we do is get a chance to turn it down to a low pilot light. You know, you have a pilot light on everything that's just burning in there. As long as you don't turn it on, it don't happen. My sponsor told me, Doc, you can pour liquor over your head, you can fill up a bathtub and get in it. As long as it don't go in your mouth, you're all right. That's a hell of a statement. Because I used to walk around fearing alcohol. You go to a supermarket, you go around every aisle, except when you look down that liquor aisle. Dun-dun-dun. Like a big turtle gets dark, you know what I mean? Come on in here, motherfucker. You know, I don't have to do that no more, you know. I respect what it did to me, you know. Like Debo, beat me down. You know, I don't have to go through that fight no more. All I have to do is respect it. So you said I got 5 minutes left? Right about that time? All right. You know, I had a guy tell me once, he said, I can tell you a joke about people who are real alcoholics. You know, people say, am I really an alcoholic? Real alcoholic. Guy goes in the liquor store and he sits there and he's talking to the manager. He says, man, you come in here and spend too much damn money on liquor. I got something that's going to solve all your problems. He brings out a bottle of liquor and sets it there. He says, go ahead, drink it. And he just picks it up and chugs it down, drinks it, sets it down, and fills back up. He looks at God. He said, what do you think? He said, I can't believe that. Do it again. Picks it up, chugs it down, sets it down, and fills back up. He says, now, what do you think about that? He said, I want two of them. Now, that's a real alcoholic. That's a real alcoholic. You only need one. But our obsession... You only need one. There's three people sitting at the bar. One of them's a normie. One of them's a chronic drinker. And the other one's an alcoholic. They all got a fly in their glass. The normie picks it up and tells the bartender, oh, there's a fly in there. Pour me another one. The normie, the other guy, you know, is a hard drinker. He just picks the fly up and throws it out and starts drinking. Alcoholic picks the fly up and goes, spit it out. For those of us that they say, you know, we seek outside help, you know, and we take different medications, and people say, well, you ain't sober, this or that, whoop-de-whoop, you know. Don't believe that shit, you know. For those people who tell you that, get away from them. And for the ones that don't want to listen, you tell them, hold on, my doctor told me to give you something. Put a finger in my pocket. You know, for all of you guys here, you know, thanks for letting me share. I've done a lot of this meeting in my first 4 years of recovery, but I do a lot now for my veterans, and I'm always in the hunt. When I'm not here in the rules of recovery, you can bet I'm doing special operations to help those that really just don't want to know this yet. All right? That's what I do. I am not a give-back guru, but I am a give-back kid. Thanks for letting me share.